T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hour number 4 for Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Riker. We're going to have fun this hour yet again. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Pope. Yeesh. All right, so if anyone is Catholic, I do want to get your thoughts on the Pope. But I want to talk scams first. And one thing that we heard from our friend up in Ohio just right before the break there, we were talking about the investigations. When it comes to politicians keeping things honest, it's a dirty pig pen that politicians play in, and it's a bunch of people that do things that are at most questionable all day long. So I think when politicians have at least some control of bringing justice down on their own, I feel like what they do is they try to say, well, it could have happened to any of us, thus you can't go full blown on that. Now, is that defeating the purpose of a justice system? Yes. Should you be able to prosecute politicians the same way you do anyone else? Yes, absolutely. Is it embarrassing if someone that ran for president or is president of the United States gets caught up in something very, very bad? It's terribly embarrassing. Is it bad for our country? Yeah. Is it worse for our country to allow them to do it? That's the question. I think that's the question a lot of people try to justify not putting a Hillary Clinton in an indictment situation or taking an investigation more seriously, even though they took it very seriously, I thought. But they came to a conclusion, I think, which goes back to the bigger question, is the crime more embarrassing than it is something that should put them in jail? It's interesting. It's an interesting line that politicians work, especially when you're that high into it, when president of the United States. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I mean, I think that's just the way the thought process for me goes. That's my thought process. I'd say it better that way. All right, so that's what I wanted to say when Tom was calling in. They didn't have time, but is it right or wrong? Yeah, no, it's wrong. If someone does something that deserves to have, they need to be held accountable. Do politicians generally, are they held accountable? No, they're not. And it hurts the system. Yeah. No, I would agree with that. All right. But I do want to talk about scams. Have you ever been scammed? Have you ever been through this pony show before? 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. I want to know how you in particular were scammed. Specifically, tell me, what did you fall for? And don't feel like you're embarrassed by it, because, you know, and after the fact, you might say, I can't believe I fell for that. I can't believe I did this. Listen, you are the victim of a scam. Don't feel like you need to kick yourself any further on it. You need to help other people learn from these things so they don't fall into it yet again. So here's a couple of scams, and one happened in Wisconsin. A woman who thought she had discovered a wallet with $150,000 inside. Well, as you can tell, scammed. She was walking through a parking lot in Wisconsin, Brookfield, when a woman called out to her and said, hey, did you drop this? She was holding up a wallet with cash inside. Brown, almost look about the size of a brick. They called over to a third woman to take a look. They decided, well, you know what? The three of us, we found it. Finders, keepers. We're going to keep this money that we just found. Mistake number one. So the woman who found the wallet said she worked at First Weber Realty. She wanted to go to her office. They had a money counting machine there. And she said the boss can drop some paperwork to keep the money there legally. At this point, no red lights were flashing in the back of this woman's head. She thought, oh, this is all normal. Red lights should be going off. There should be bells and whistles going like crazy. But when it comes to that much amount of money, people are like, you know what? This risk, it may be worth it to get this outcome. They start to become intoxicated with the idea that they're going to have a big lump sum of money fall right into their laps. So she came back with the unbelievable news. Oh, guess what? The boss just counted the money. $150,000 in cash. Let's split it up. But in order to get the money the woman claimed, All three of them had to provide some cash to prove they were financially responsible. So they said, let's drive to the bank right now. We'll all take some money out of the bank to show that we're financially responsible. And then that way we know we can trust each other with the money. We're not trying to scam each other, right? Oh, this is going to be great. We're going to walk away with all this money. The victim went along with it, went to the bank, withdrew a couple $1,000s, came back and gave it to the women to show that she was indeed responsible. It was at that point she knew something was wrong, and at that point it was too late. They already had her money. The whole thing was horrendous. She said the victim spent 3 hours with the alleged scammers. She said even though she's broke, she's just grateful she wasn't hurt. What a crazy scam. Are you kidding? You're going to meet strangers in a parking lot and you're going to hand over a couple grand to them? It's insane. Here's a couple of more scams that happened. College students fall for scams a lot. The tuition scam, this is an interesting one. A scammer collects a college student or contacts them saying his or her parents that the tuition payment's late and there will be severe consequences. You must send me money immediately. Well, they either fraudulently say they represent the school or the whoever the loan's through, and they just do this and try to get money. You know, big scam. Contact the school and make sure this is accurate to begin with. Oh, here's another one. Advanced fees. They get a call from someone saying, hey, we saw that you filled out for financial aid or your scholarship or your loan or whatever it is, but hey, you didn't pay your fees up front. Pay us now or this loan goes away. You will lose everything. We will make sure your kid gets kicked out of all his classes. He'll be dropped from all of them because of your financial problems. Parents very easily say, here, take my money. We don't want my kid out of college. We're in love with him. I don't want him coming back stinking up the house. I'm done doing his laundry. I'm done feeding him every day. Here's my money. Keep him out. Now, it's kind of like that. Here's a couple of other things, too. Here's some warning signs when it comes to financial aid and scholarships. If you hear these phrases, you should have a red light just start flashing in the back of your mind. The scholarship is guaranteed or your money back. You can get this information or you can't get this information anywhere else. You need your credit card or bank account number in order to hold this scholarship. We'll do all the work. You just pay the processing fee. Scholarships, oh, that'll cost you some money. Very scary time putting your kids through school. I know they're back already, but very scary time. You're worried. You know, it's going to cost an arm and a leg, but you know this is what they need to do. They want to start a career. They want to be responsible. You're trying to help your kids out. And of course, it's going to be expensive. So you expect things like this to happen. And very foolishly, you give more money out than you need to. And then you find out you gave it to a scammer. Online books, by the way, people try to sell you books online from these really shady areas. Oh, yeah, yeah, we'll send it to you. Never does, never gets it. The college book business is a scam, too. Crazy. All right, so there's a couple of things you can avoid. If you want to share your stories, tweet at me, at Ryan Recker. The new iPhone is out. Are you going to go crazy for it? It's going to be debuting today, Tuesday. I want to talk about it because some people say, does the world really need a new iPhone? Well, you answer that. Or do you want it? You're the consumer. This is Overnight America, KMOX. And welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. I'm not sure why that wasn't playing. That was weird. So, moving through this hour, I wanted to look at the new iPhone. I'm looking at trying to figure out what this world really needs more. A new iPhone or anything else besides a new iPhone. So how often are you going to be replacing your phone? It's so expensive. Have you gone cell phone shopping lately? It was beautiful back in the day. Back when $100 used to get you a mobile phone and you're like, wow, that was expensive. Then these smartphones came along and you're like, oh, that's even more expensive. And now you can barely find a free smartphone because a lot of these different plans don't cover these free phones anymore. You know, it used to be subsidized nearly when it came to any service that you picked up for. But those days of it being a gimme just doesn't happen as much. So iPhone is still pumping out, or Apple is still pumping out these iPhones over and over and over again. And they're ready to announce their next iPhone. It's the 10th anniversary iPhone. There's all kinds of different features that are going to be on this new one. And people are wondering, do we really need a new iPhone? My answer is, why not? You know, people are, if you want to buy an iPhone, buy an iPhone. Don't be stupid if you can't afford it and just mortgage everything you got to get a mobile phone. You got to go spend $700, $800 on this thing. Now, I realize that you carry around your phone everywhere you go. It is not only the thing you use to text people. It's what you use to call people. It's what you use to take photos. It's what you use to play games. It's what you use to access social media. It's what you use to get from point A to point B with the GPS. It does everything that you use. So, yes, if you want to spend money on a mobile phone, a smartphone, by all means, do it. It's your money. You're an American. You're free to do whatever you want. So, yes, people are going to go online and they're going to cry, oh, Apple, I got a new iPhone. Didn't they just buy one last year? Well, shut up. It's because people are using it and they're buying it. So let the American people, whoever, use their money wherever they want to spend it because they're free to do so. Okay, I came a little hard on here because based on this article, it's people are saying, oh, blame Apple. It's their fault everyone's buying these phones because they're making the products and people want to buy it. Well, isn't that how the economy works? People make stuff and other people want to buy it. Done. That's how it goes. This article is written by CGTN. I have no idea. I've never heard of this website before. 10th anniversary iPhone will mark the launch of the highly and hotly anticipated new model that'll come out later today. It's technically Tuesday, and it's going to make its big debut. Some of the features they talked about, instead of using a thumbprint, they're going to use facial recognition.
Ooh.
I don't need all this stuff. Like last year, sixth generation of iPhone have followed, with each one being better received than the last. More than 201 million units were sold worldwide last year, up from 1.4 million in 2007. Wow, that's amazing. 10 years ago, they sold nearly 1.5 million. Now, last year, 201 million. With the 10th anniversary approaching, this journalist, quote-unquote journalist, said, I wonder if I could use the old iPhone. Like, if I picked up a 10-year-old iPhone, could I still use it today? Or is it obsolete? This is what they ended up finding, all right? What could I do? So they found an old iPhone, charged it up, said, let's use it. So the first affirmation that all was not so convenient was a dim, distant land of 2G internet. Ah, that was a long time ago, so it was super slow trying to use this thing. And yes, 2007 was way before 3G and now 4G and LTE and all these other versions and things. She found out it was very slow. They had no ability to download apps because that came with a later operating system. Yeah, there wasn't a Play Store in it, so you can only use what you had on there. And then eventually you can upload or update the operating system. The problem with Apple is if you're going to update the operating system, it puts you to the most recent one. You can't pick what version you go to. So why is that bad? Okay, it's bad because the new operating system can't run on the old iPhones. They're not powerful enough to handle current software. So this is where their conspiracy comes in. They say they purposely update the software to make it purposely obsolete to your old phones. Oh, they update the software just so you can't use older phones and thus pushing it out. And it's a giant conspiracy to get you to upgrade. Number one, you don't have to upgrade your phone, right? You can turn those updates off if you do have an old phone and you want to continue to use it. Number two, just do that. If you're perfectly fine with your old phone, just do that. Here lies the root of obsolete. Computers are the same way when it comes to Macs, when it comes to Windows-based. You know, they're going to try to push these updates. Your computer might not be able to handle it, thus you might not want to update your computer. So to me, some people say the iPhones are a scam. No, it's not. It's just, that's what people want. Here's a thing that definitely is a scam. I saw this article out of a newsroom of a school, the UNSW. They're a school, I believe, out of Australia. And there was a published team in Africa that put out an article and put out a study that says scientists studying African wild dogs in Botswana have found members of this species that sneezes to vote when the pack will move off and start hunting. So I want you to imagine these things that look like hyena/dogs type of deals. Imagine them all hanging out with each other, and they have to come up with an important decision. Is it time to go hunting? And then based on the amount of dogs, I'm just going to call them dogs because that's what they look like. Imagine based on the amount that sneeze, a majority rule, and if a majority say yes, they go out and vote. I'm thinking that those guys were taking some drugs down there. They are seeing some crazy things. The organizer said, I wanted to better understand this collective behavior. Notice that dogs were sneezing while preparing to go. More sneezes that occurred, the more likely it was the pack moved off and started hunting. Now, you're getting stir crazy. You've probably been isolated from humans for a long time. I imagine you have a beard that goes down to your belly and, you know, you've been just completely off the grid and you've gotten a little cuckoo bananas. Either that or you're completely lying and you realize that if you come up with a study like this, yeah, there's going to be some journal that posts this. And yes, there's going to be some website that writes it up. And yes, there's going to be some people here in the United States in talk radio shows that like the headlines and we'll talk about it. And yes, people are going to see this thing and post it up on social media. What I'm saying is don't fall for stupid stuff like this. There's no way this is true. This is crazy, been absolutely crazy. The guy just... probably a sample size of one pack, and he paid close attention to the sneezing. Oh, thank goodness. I'm so glad someone's here paying attention to the sneezing of African packs in Botswana. So happy people are paying attention to that. And it's published in one of my absolute favorite journals, the Proceedings of the Royal Security Bee. What an awesome published journal. I mean, I don't miss an episode of that. In fact, I've been a subscriber for years. That's sarcasm if you can't catch up on that. All right. A couple of things I want to get to again this hour. Had an interview with Mike Love earlier today. It was awesome. He's the Beach Boys, man, the lead singer. He has a very distinctive voice. He's played here in St. Louis a bunch of times. You know, being that it is September 11th, I wanted to know where he was on September 11th. And then he kind of surprised me with the answer because he gave an answer I've never heard before whenever someone asked that question. Normally when you ask the question, you get an answer. I didn't get an answer from him. So I'm going to start the interview off with him with that. And you can reach out to me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. You can get me right on there. Or email me, ryan.recker@kmox.com. I do like getting your emails. But I do post things, you know, any show that we have on here, we post in the podcast section at kmox.com. Yeah, go download the show. Share it with your friends. If you heard something you like, send it on over to them. I'd like for you to share this show. I think it's important that we share and keep this going. All right, this is Overnight America, KMOX. I don't think there's any way you could hear that song and not know it's the Beach Boys. Like, it's one of the most distinguishing voices in all of music. Listen, just listen to that. That just sounds so good. That's Mike Love joining us now on the Quiver River Electric Celebrity Line. Hey, Mike, what's going on?
I'm okay.
Given the uniqueness of this day, September 11th, can I ask where you were during the attacks?
See, I'd have to look. I can't remember. I remember my wife's birthday is the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let's see. Where was... Oh, you know what? My sister... is married to a guy who had an office in one of those two towers.
Mm.
And they called to let me know that my brother-in-law was taking their son, who's now in college, to kindergarten. Mm. And the smoke was billowing down the street, and they actually found a finger on their balcony.
Ooh.
It was rough.
Wow.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I remember getting that call. That was horrible. They since moved up out of the city. You know, I don't blame them.
Mm.
They were so traumatized by it.
Well, your book came out, Good Vibrations, an excellent book, a nice look back at your life as a Beach Boy. What makes for a life well lived? Because you're one that lived a very interesting life.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. I've gone places because of our music that I probably never would have considered going to. Met people that are very, very interesting, not only presidents, but, for instance, meeting Maharishi and being invited to go to India. And when I got there, the Beatles were there at his academy in Rishikesh, India, where the Ganges River comes out of the Himalayas. It was beautiful. With all kinds, the Beatles were there, all kinds of music, all kinds of lectures and meditation. And birthday parties for George Harrison and I were both Pisces. He on February 25th, I on March 15th. So that was just a fascinating, fascinating thing. And you know, hanging out with Marlon Brando and in Paris was amazing. Some just fantastic life experiences. But I think the one with learning meditation from Maharishi was definitely a life-changing experience for me.
Yeah. In your book, you talked about learning of the Beatles for the first time, and they were a sensation. They came here to America. You said you saw the group as a challenge. So at the time, how did you think you were going to compete when you saw this challenge coming to America?
Well, you know what? I don't think anybody is more successful or popular than the Beatles were and have been and still to an extent are. There are just some people that stand out above all the others in terms of popularity, like Elvis for his time and the Beatles for their time and Michael Jackson for his time. There's always been these special, you know, meteoric careers. But the Beach Boys, even at the height of Beatlemania and the height of Beatles' career in 1966, our song Good Vibrations went to number one in Great Britain, and we were voted the number one group in Great Britain, number two being the Beatles. So that's pretty amazing, mm-hmm. you know. So even though there was a tremendous, huge surge of popularity for the Beatles, there's plenty of fans of ours that still were, you know, coming to Beach Boys concert and buying our records and stuff. In fact, some of the radio stations out in California, I remember it was the KFWB Beatles and the KFWB Beach Boys. And they would have a contest saying, who do you like most, the Beatles or the Beach Boys? So actually, it was probably good for business to have that kind of rivalry and competition. But we loved each other's stuff. I mean, we were big fans of each other's music, so it wasn't ever negative like that, but it was incredibly powerful how amazing they were, and yet we still held our own in terms of our fan base and got plenty of recognition.
Yeah. Do you have any stories of coming to St. Louis?
Oh, yeah. We played Under the Arch a couple times for July 4th. Brought to you by Anheuser-Busch, of course.
Sure, yeah. Well, that must have been fun. That's a great location.
Yes, it is. I remember that very well. And, you know, we played in the surrounding areas as well. Yeah. So, yeah, St. Louis has been great. You know, we've had over the 5 decades that we've been out active touring, we've been to St. Louis many times.
Let me ask you about your tour writer. Do you have any unique items on there you normally request?
I like hummus.
Yeah?
Yes. We have a lot of gluten-free stuff. We have a lot of hummus. We have a vegetarian entree because, you know, our lead guitarist is 100% vegetarian, and I'm 97.5, but I'll eat some fish, you know, if it's decent. And so, but, yeah, we have a writer that we try to have some healthy things on it, as well as we have, for those who want to partake, some beers and some vino. So, but it's nothing outlandish. It's just that there is an accent in eating healthy, so you can, you know, stay healthy and enjoy life, enjoy what you're doing.
You know, that's a big part of life, right? Enjoy what you're doing. Were you surprised 1974 when Endless Summer came out and it charted for 155 weeks?
You know what? Originally, they wanted to come out with an album called The Best of the Beach Boys Volume 3 or something. I said, there's no such thing, but how about if we call it Endless Summer? Which harkens back to the surf movie by Bruce Brown called Endless Summer. And so it had a somewhat of a double connotation there. But for the Beach Boys, we've always our music has always been associated with outdoors and Southern California and summer. And so I just thought, I came up with that concept, that idea to name the album Endless Summer. And it worked out really well. In England, there was an album that was a similar package called 20 Golden Greats, and it sold 1 million copies in just England.
We continue our conversation with Mike Love, Good Vibrations, My Life as a Beach Boy, a fascinating read, and he talks about his interactions with Charlie Manson. It's kind of an interesting part of Beach Boy history. Did you know that Charlie Manson recorded with the Beach Boys? That story and more coming up next in Overnight America, KMOX. We continue our conversation with Beach Boy Mike Love, the book Good Vibrations, a New York Times bestseller, and it's written very conversation-like. I'm sure you'll really enjoy it if you want to go pick it up. He joins us on the Quiver River Electric Celebrity Line on Overnight America. This is kind of an interesting question because you talk about Charlie Manson a little bit in your book and the history behind that. You know, the girl staying at the house and Dennis and then him threatening you. Can you tell that story?
Yeah. My cousin Dennis picked up a couple of hitchhikers, a couple of young ladies, and brought them back to his house. And then we were on tour at one point in time, and then he came back to his house, and Charlie Manson was living in his house with those two girls and maybe 10 more. So my cousin Dennis really didn't mind having access to all that many girls. So, but we didn't know that Charlie was murderous. I thought he was weird. I only met him once, and that was at a dinner party that Dennis invited me to. Bruce Johnson and I were invited to go to dinner, and we were the only people with clothing on.
Oh, no.
So it was weird. It was really weird. But, you know, I wasn't about ready to join Manson's family. I've been meditating. Thanks to Maharishi, I learned to meditate, and I was doing really well with that, you know.
Yeah.
And it didn't involve any drugs and stuff, and Charlie was passing out LSD, which I declined, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all very, very weird.
I read that Charlie, did he actually record with someone at the time?
He did. My cousin Dennis got Charlie over to my cousin Brian's house in Bel Air, where we had an in-home studio.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis wrote some songs to Charlie, and Charlie had some other songs that he'd written, and they recorded some.
Yeah, you know, oddly enough, this is the anniversary date of the recording, too. It happened on September 11th.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Kind of a crazy connection there. I do want to talk to you about your relationship with Brian Wilson, because last year there was a lot of trades and a lot of music publications that picked up you guys. So how is your relationship today with him?
Well, if it were just Brian and I together in a studio to be or a home or on a piano, it'd be great. But it's not that way. He is controlled, and we were supposed to write together on an album called That's Why God Made the Radio, but we were disallowed from doing so. And that was not a great thing. I didn't enjoy that. But also, he has his own band, and he continues to travel and do shows. And I with the Beach Boys, being a lead singer since the beginning, we probably will do over 175 shows this year.
Yeah.
So we keep very busy, so our paths don't really cross.
How do you look at contemporary music?
Well, you know, I get exposed to it because my youngest daughter, who's 21, Amba, she'll say, "Hey, listen to this, Dad." And sometimes she'll play me some hip hop, or sometimes she'll play me Amy Winehouse, or you know, Foster the People. She hit me to them about several years ago when they had that huge hit, and she knew about it all before it even became mainstream. So, and they ended up doing "Wouldn't It Be Nice" with us on the Grammys in 2012, and Adam Levine did "Surfer Girl," and then we all did "Good Vibrations" together, which was really cool.
Yeah,
and also Glenn Campbell was honored there at that Grammy.
Oh yeah,
and
that's right.
Yeah, it was great seeing him. We took a photo together. We just did a memorial service for him where we sang "I Get Around," which he played on the record, the track, as a studio musician, and also we did "Their Hearts Were Full of Spring," which is by the Four Freshmen, a beautiful song about lasting love. We dedicated it to his wife, Kim. So, where were we?
Well, any unique voices that stand out? You have one of the most unique voices in all of music.
You know, when people ask me about performers nowadays, I always say Bruno Mars. I just love the way he's such an entertainer and he's a great creative and just in my style of entertainment and music, I think. But there are always going to be great singers and great performers in every decade, and every generation is going to have their idols. But we're just kind of, I often say that the Beach Boys are kind of like a sonic oasis. We're our own kind of musical entity, and it's really a blessing that what was a family tradition, music and harmony and singing together, morphed into a profession by virtue of the fact that my cousin Brian and I were able to get together and write some great songs that people still love to hear to this day.
Mm-hmm. You know, Good Vibrations, My Life as a Beach Boy, just talking to you here, I realize the spirit of your conversation is throughout this whole book, because it's almost like you're just having a conversation and you're sitting down and you're talking to people about some of the amazing things that happened in your life and through music. So I got to say, it's an excellent read, and I had a great time talking to you today. Mike Love, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the program.
Cool book. It's weird if you ever have an interaction, you know, you don't get to, I don't think it's probably the first person I ever talked to that has met Charlie Manson. Can you still write letters to Charlie Manson in prison? I knew he used to be able to, like, he would accept them and normally write back. There was a project, I wish I remember what it was called, but there was a project where a journalist wrote letters to high-profile people in prison as a child. So he tried to give the guise of him being a kid, and he wanted to see who would write back, and Charlie Manson was one of them that would write back. Now, the weird thing is, he would always write, and a lot of these criminals would write words of advice. Don't make the mistakes I made type of advice. Do you really want your kid getting advice from Charlie Manson? Should we try to write a letter? Should I write a letter to Charlie? No, I'm not going to. Well, the Son of Sam guy, I wonder if he's going to get out on parole. He's the next one up on the list. There's a couple of different ones you can write in prison. I think that may be receptive to it. I wonder how much mail they actually get anymore. All right, I only got a couple of minutes here. There was a story I wanted to get to, but I just didn't have time. Maybe I'll save this for tomorrow. Okay, here's an interesting thing. This is a quick story. I got a whole stack of stuff. You know, tomorrow night, which is really tonight on a Tuesday, we start after Cardinals baseball, so it's going to be a little late start. But I read this and thought, you know, who would do this? There's a new type of shoe Nike has put together, which you can basically go to a vending machine, custom-made shoes. So for decades, Nike has worked directly with athletes to create cutting-edge and highly professional and personalized products. Over time, their relationship went to designers. They made them look nice. And, of course, people are going and looting right now down in Florida and Texas, looting to get their tennis shoes. Kind of sickening. But this month, with the opening of Nike Makers Experience at Nike by U Studio in New York City, their advanced innovation team brings elements to this process to the consumer by what? They give you a choice, and you punch it into the computer, and the shoe is made in front of you from, like, a vending machine. Do you think people in China are upset we're stealing their jobs? I mean, that's where a lot of the manufacturing comes from with these Nike shoes and stuff. I kind of said that tongue-in-cheek, but not really. It's, you know, it's kind of interesting if you think about it. What are made are these one-of-the-kind versions of the Nike Presto X. There are two versions of a shoe, traditional and slip-on. You can tell them, hey, I want this type of color, I want this type of text on it, I want this type of pattern. And, you know, you got these different design choices, and you press a button, and they say within less than 90 minutes, an hour and a half, you can get your shoe, boom, right there in front of you. One final design is chosen. Each one-of-a-kind Nike Presto X is built in the studio in roughly less than an hour to hour and a half. It's an invite-only experience. So if you didn't get the golden ticket, well, boo-hoo for you. No golden ticket. It'll be initially limited to Nike friends and family and select Nike Plus members. My dad never let me buy Nikes, by the way, when I was growing up. He said, you are not buying this shoe made in China. And little did I know, everything was made in China at that time. He said, you are not buying and you're not supporting Nike. So the very first Nike shoes I bought were probably when I was in Ohio in 2009-ish. So I went almost my entire life without having anything Nike. And the only reason why I bought a Nike shoe at that point was because it was the cheapest shoe available and for the nicest thing. And I needed a pair of gym shoes just so I could go, like, running on a treadmill or something like that. So it was out of necessity. And I just, when I went shopping, they were the most comfortable and the ones on sale. That's how I made my decision-making. But it was weird. It, you know, all my friends had Nike shoes. Like, every time you went to gym class, everyone had Nike shoes. And I always had these these cheapo shoes made in America. They'd always leave all the scuff marks on the gym, squeaky as crazy. But, you know, what kind of beggars can't be choosers? When my parents were paying, I didn't have much of a choice. All right, well, that does it. You can go back and listen to the podcast. Go to KMOX.com. And my latest blog is up too, KMOX.com/Ryan. And it's been a pretty crazy, crazy week for news. So I posted some stuff on there and my conspiracy theory about the Amazon HQ2, which St. Louis is trying to get. I have a conspiracy theory on it. If you missed it from yesterday, go back. I posted a video at KMOX.com/Ryan. That's my blog section. Enjoy the rest of your night. Coming up next, I want to talk a little bit more about 9/11. It is the anniversary and all. Some clips from it on Overnight America, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.